Funding for Think comes from the SMU Master of Liberal Studies program.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Jerome Weeks, filling in for Chris Boyd. Why do bookstores, especially small independent bookstores, continue to exist? Amazon has been amazing for book lovers. It's helped make more books, print books, audiobooks, electronic books, more books available to more people than at any time in history. But as a result, between 2000 and 2007, more than 1,000 bookstores closed. And then Borders, the giant bookstore chain, went bankrupt. But that collapse may partly explain why the independent bookstore is not yet dead. Since 2009, the number of independent booksellers actually has grown by nearly 20%. Here to talk about that and their own bookstores in North Texas are John Tilton of Lucky Dog Books, which has outlets in Mesquite, Dallas, and Oak Cliff, and Carlos Guajardo of The Wild Detectives, a brand new bookstore in the Bishop Arts District. Welcome, gentlemen, to Think.
Hi.
Thank you.
For listeners who may be unfamiliar with your establishments, if each of you could just quickly describe your store, where it's located, what makes it distinctive, and I'll start with you, Carlos.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. We are The Wild Detectives, located on 8th Street in the Bishop Arts District. We just opened 3 months ago, and it's actually a 1945 Craftsman home that's been converted into a bookstore, coffee shop, and cafe, and we specialize in mostly, we sell new books, and we specialize in literature and poetry, mostly current authors.
People should know that despite the title, it's not a mystery bookstore.
Correct. We do have, you know, kind of a variety of books, but primarily it's literature from more independent authors, small press, university press, a lot of foreign authors in translation, and we also have a section for Spanish books, literature in untranslated Spanish.
You don't have a huge inventory like many of the chain stores, but instead yours is very select. It's kind of, you know, as I like to say, it's curated.
Yes, that is the key word. We don't have a lot of space, like you said. We're only 1,000 square feet, and so we really had to be selective about the selection that we wanted to offer. And we have our bookshelves are relegated to the walls. We don't have the traditional aisles of books. We really wanted to make the space more of an inviting project space for people to hang out and converse and talk. And so we really wanted to do our selection of books just really well curated and really offer some of these hard to find or maybe lesser represented titles and authors that that we really stand behind, but maybe you wouldn't be able to find so readily at a major bookstore.
When I describe your bookstore to people, I often say that it has a very literary and somewhat international bent. Is that safe to say?
Certainly. Well, the owners are both from Spain, so we sort of brought a little bit of that vibe to the location in Europe and in Spain, in Madrid in particular. It's not uncommon to find a bookstore that has a very small selection, a very niche maybe offering. That is also something else, whether it's a cafe or a bistro or a bar. And that was just out of necessity for being able to still offer books and for the book culture to keep that going. It was necessary to sort of find another way to bring customers into the retail space, and by offering something that is, let people kind of engage in the space like beer or wine or coffee was really necessary to for those bookstores to thrive. And that's something that we wanted to do here and sort of introduce people in Dallas and in Oak Cliff into that concept.
John, you're kind of the grand old man of local booksellers. So if you could tell us a little bit about Lucky Dog Books.
Well, thank you for pointing that out, Jerome. Nothing like feeling a little older here.
Well, it's an accomplishment in the world of bookselling.
Maybe so, but I'd really like to start out just from what Carlos said. pointing out that what he's doing is what the quality new bookstores of Dallas used to do before the mega stores came along, all the places like the one that used to be at Preston Royal for so many years, and almost all the ones I can remember as growing up, the booksellers were selecting the books that they thought you might well be interested in or should know about.
So there was a personal flavor.
Right, it was. And it wasn't just this huge warehouse sort of thing where we just put everything out there and see what you want to get and then look at our stats and see, okay, we'll trend you and see whatever. But our stores, we are more the general sort of thing. We're general use bookstores. We started, as you say, over 40 years ago out in Mesquite with our first full-time stores, Paperbacks Plus, and a couple of years ago adopted the name Lucky Dog Books as we moved one store and started a new location because we thought our name didn't really give the full breadth of what we do. And we started
back. You mean Paperbacks Plus?
Right, Paperbacks Plus. Right. People tend to focus on the big word instead of the small word that really meant more because we have always had hardbacks and expanded to movies and music as those formats came along and were available for people to own themselves and to trade in. But our general motivation to do this was to save readers money so that they could enjoy more reading than what they would have otherwise been able to afford, and to offer a way to recycle books, to trade them in so that you could pay for part of your purchase with your stuff instead of money. So those kind of things are what we feel like that we've tried to do over the years.
That's one of the things that distinguishes Lucky Dog from Half Price, is that you generally don't buy books from people. You tend to trade them.
Well, we do actually buy a lot of books, but we're much more selective about it. We've never had a policy of buying everything because we felt like if we are paying money for things we don't really need, we're going to have to take that out of paying more money for the things we really do need. And so we have a lot of people who come in and say, give us cash for what you can and credit on the rest, where the things we can't really pay for, we will give store credit on nearly everything unless it's just something that is too damaged or whatever, which will go in our free pile outside. We try to never throw any of them away. You know, it may not be worth money anymore, but still may be worth use to somebody who can't even afford our prices, much less, you know, the other. But the store credit policy is the main thing that distinguishes us over the years, is that you can pay for half your purchases with your stuff instead of money. So,
the late poet Robert Trammell made mm-hmm. Paperbacks Plus something of a location for the literary community. I wonder if you could talk about that a little bit.
Well, he did at a certain point over in our Lakewood area. He had worked at that store, was working at that store, and initiated a series of readings there. But we had actually already been doing readings three or four years before that out at our Mesquite store at a time when the Old Moon and Friends over on Greenville Avenue was the only place doing any kind of readings at all. And we thought, well, there's room for more to do this. And we were sort of inspired by them to start out there and had really a very active series there. But Bob did a lot and just continued on and got WordSpace going, which today is a vibrant organization going with lots of activities. And it's too bad he's not still here to be able to see just the success they've been able to have from his initial founding of it with some other East Dallas artists, basically, and writers. So
I've been to your Garland store, and you have this cozy little room with a circle of comfy chairs
right.
That's really clearly set up for meetings and readings. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about what happens in that room.
Well, we have a room like that there, and we have a room like that at our Oak Cliff store as well. And these are rooms that are basically community rooms that are available for neighborhood meetings if you need to get out of your house to do things or if you want to do your book club somewhere out of the house. But there are also a lot of readings and workshops and things. And we don't really, frankly, schedule much ourselves. We make it available to everyone else to do their kind of events there. And if they're not charging any money, they don't pay anything for it. If they take in some money for it, they pay us a small percentage of that with no guarantee or minimum or anything. And so there's people doing yoga classes in Oak Cliff. There's a Tibetan Buddhist class. There's a lady doing acupuncture one night a week. There's an Irish class at the Lockwood store. And I should say it's not actually in Garland. It's on Garland Road. Right, it's still right. In Dallas, close to Casalinda mm-hmm. there. But there's an Irish class every Saturday afternoon. And so there's a lot of variety of different things. So,
mm-hmm. Carlos, what John's been talking about is something that many people have pointed to as something of the future of bookstores is that they're actually kind of literary cultural community centers. And the owners of the Wild Detectives, Paco and Javier, have taken that to the next step with actually serving wine and beer. And yes. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about that. I also was struck by the way they designed the furniture so that everything could be – it rolls. It pushes it to the wall to really open it up.
Well, we wanted the space to be dynamic, and we didn't want to limit ourselves to any one thing. We wanted to be able to host events and a variety of events, the more traditional – you know, book readings or poetry readings, author signings, that sort of thing, but also to do things that are not necessarily something that you think of when you think of a bookstore, like a wine tasting or you know, beer tasting or you know, when to be able to, you know, in the future maybe show some films and
we've already had concerts there, haven't you?
We've had concerts, yeah. We have a back patio area where we've had a few what we call backyard parties and had some success with that and bringing in some live music from both in the North Texas area and from out of state as well. And we just really wanted to make it a space for creativity. I think the books sort of inspire that, and it brings people to the space out of curiosity, but we also, you know, use that as a jumping off point for other things that book lovers are passionate about, and that's that just all of those things go along with that.
A lot of, well, not a lot, but I know that a number of local book lovers were waiting on Wild Detectives to open for months and months.
You were one of those.
Yes. and I gather that it had to do with a lot of things like getting the city permits and because you were serving wine and beer. Is that true? Was that the hang up?
Sure. Well, that was a lot of it. I mean, there were a lot of challenges that went along with that. Unfortunately, for me, I came along late in the process where a lot of the behind-the-scenes bureaucracy had already been handled. But yeah, there was a lot of that. You know, being that we're in a conservation district in Oak Cliff, there were certain codes that we had to make sure that we had to
for the building
for the building and then of course, like you said, the wine and beer and liquors licensing, we're actually we actually operate as a private club for that reason, being in the proximity to there's a church down the neighborhood, and there were all sorts of little things that we had to do in order to be able to bring what we wanted to offer into existence, but you know, we overcame all those little hurdles, and you know, we found a way to do that. So we're pretty excited to be able to all the concepts that we had going into it, we were able to bring those to fruition.
You used to work for Borders.
I did.
One of the things that distinguished Borders from Barnes & Noble, not just simply in my estimation, but as a fact, was that they tended to train their staff in the inventory. More than Barnes & Noble's, if mm-hmm. you asked someone at Borders for a recommendation or asked them about, you know, a novel by so-and-so, they could actually answer the question, could point you to where it was. I don't mean to be knocking Barnes & Noble, but Borders was known for that sort of thing. And I was wondering if that's the case with your staff. Are you educating them in the stock?
Certainly. And, you know, we encourage everyone to read and get to know the selection that we have, but also to, you know, even fill in the gaps with their own recommendations of things that maybe I didn't think to order, we didn't think to have on the list, but items that that they can speak passionately about that they've already read and bring that stock into the inventory if it kind of fits with what we have going on. Yeah, Borders was a great sort of training ground for that. Actually, when I started years ago, I was still in college, I actually had to take a test as part of the application process to see where my knowledge was of books and music and film and all that. And I don't know that still exists for other retailers, but you had to prove your mettle early on in order to join the team. So.
Well, did anything prepare you for what you're sort of becoming as the manager of the Wild Detectives? I mean, the concert promoter, this guy, events,
bar manager. you know, I had to learn a lot. I had to go back and in a lot of ways, you know, knowing what I knew about book retail was great, but a lot of things that we're doing, I had to sort of reinvent myself and reinvent the way I wanted to offer what we needed to do. We had to, you know, really sort of reinvent the wheel in a lot of ways to be able to operate.
Okay. We'll be coming back to our discussion of local independent bookstores right after this.
Funding for Think comes from the SMU Master of Liberal Studies program, accepting applications for this fall to design your own Master of Liberal Studies degree with concentrations in human rights, creative writing, and organizational dynamics. More at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Jerome Weeks, filling in for Chris Boyd. And today we're talking about local independent bookstores. My guests are Carlos Guajardo of The Wild Detectives in Oak Cliff, John Tilton of Lucky Dog Books, and we've just been joined by Donya Craddock of The Dock Bookshop in Fort Worth. Thank you very much for joining us, Donna.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
So I'm going to put you on the spot immediately because we've heard from John and Carlos. I was wondering if you could just kind of briefly describe your store. What makes it distinctive?
Well, currently the Dock Bookshop is the largest African-American-owned bookstore and full-service bookstore in Dallas-Fort Worth, where we'll sell poetry and every poetry, fiction, nonfiction, mystery, and what have you by various authors. And it's just been a kind of a niche market right now with African Americans and just filling that void within the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And it has become an oasis. A lot of community organizations meet there because we do have a large community area where we have different events from book signings, children events, poetry events. With Base Poetry, we just kicked off a new poetry set called Base Poetry. Just a bunch of different activities that go on at the Dock Bookshop. It's just a fun-filled place to make books come alive.
In fact, you were having Malcolm X's daughter come
yeah,
in
this. Ilyasa Shabazz, Malcolm X's daughter, will be here presenting Malcolm X's book, Malcolm Little. And so that is an exciting event that, well, we actually created an event around that called the Family Book Night, because not only will Ilyasa be there, but we will also have Mary Monroe, who is a national best-selling author.
If you wish, you can join our conversation by calling 800-933-5372 or emailing us at think@kera.org. And John, you having special events this month because it's your 40th anniversary, right?
Oh, yeah, we are. Most of it's just in-store discounts and a free gift every day for each person that comes, whether it's a child or adult, whichever it is. It changes every day, so people can look at our Facebook page if they kind of want to see if it's worth coming over for getting that gift that day. But we do have a couple of different readings coming up on the 14th, I guess this coming weekend. And yeah, it's 40 years there, a long time.
Back to you, Donya. The great Emma Rogers, who ran Black Images bookstore for 30 years, closed it in 2006. And that was after 30 years, which was made her, like I believe, the longest-running African-American bookstore in Texas. So given that, if she closed, what made you think that you could make a go of it with the Dock Bookshop?
Giving all honors to Miss Emma Rogers, who is our coach at the bookstore, we have just solicited her services when it got very difficult. I believe we tackled technology. We went after that thing from Facebook, Instagram, all the social medias you can work. We do our own website designs. We still work with the American Booksellers Association. I think that's how we approached it, and we just made a run at it. And we still bring Miss Emma Rogers in for special events. So when the movie The Help came out, she led the panel discussion and just had the place full. So I just think of us being able to bring in another generation and still connecting the older generation has offered a level of success for the Doc Bookshop and continue to plow forward through some of the challenges in terms of gaining a lot of more technology. Technology is always evolving. You just got to be able to stay abreast. And I think that's one thing that we've been able to do. We have our Facebook friends page is full. Now we have our like page, which is filling up, and we just keep it going and giving everything out to the community that's out there who have, you know, circled our bookstore with love. You know, because it does become a labor of love.
Yes, it is.
In fact, it's a something of a family affair, isn't it?
Yeah.
Could you talk a little bit about how it started?
The Doc Bookshop is a family-owned and operated business, the Craddock family. We just came together. I got my second degree in history, so I was a history lover. Mm-hmm. I read history books all the time. And my business partner, my sister, she went to Bright Divinity, and she was helping sell books through Coke's libraries at some of the big conventions. And so we decided to say, hey, you know, we got inventory. Let's bring our inventory together and start a bookstore. But then it kind of grew beyond what we thought of, because we end up getting a very big space. And so we said we could do more with this, you know, because we have to be able to create an environment where books speak, because they could just sit on the shelves and nobody had touched them. So how do we make them speak? And so we've been doing plays. We do everything. Everything, I think, has went on in that store. When we opened it, we opened it in 2008. So you know what was going on in 2008. You know, the presidential election with the first African-American president, Barack Obama. So, you know, that gave a great opportunity to the bookstore promoting his books, his ideas. And then we expanded into T-shirts with sayings on there. So it just went on and on and on. And the book industry is so exciting because it's a sea, you know, it's a sea of information. That's why we call it the dock. One day you can be sitting at the dock reading some great fiction. Next day you can find yourself reading about being the first astronaut. Mm-hmm. You know, just it's so much books can go, and you just have to be able to make those books speak and then sell them.
In fact, your store is the first one I've ever been to in which essentially half of it is devoted to tables and chairs, just this open space. I was kind of struck by that you could walk in and suddenly realize that a lot of it isn't devoted necessarily to books. You have this community space, huge part of the store.
Yeah, and we have coffee and tea to sell to that to that wide open space, you know, just to fill some of the needs. And we do have a reread section too, where we sell some of the, you know, there is a population out there that just like rereads. You know, our Dean Koontz reader, they lose their book, they want some more books, and so we do have a lot of those readers that come into the bookstore.
John, with your long perspective, could you tell us a little bit, perhaps, of what has been the effect of things like the internet or the failure of Borders on your bookstores? Did you feel that? What has changed?
Well, the internet made a lot of changes. Initially, for us, people thought, "Oh, people are going to be buying their books online, so they're not going to be buying them from you." But to me, that wasn't it. It was more that the internet was something else to spend your time doing. And for a lot of people, it's a matter of the amount of time they have to read as to how much they do read. And our business has always been seasonal. It's always best when it's hottest and coldest, because there are less things that people can do with their time before the internet came along. And so there was a few years in there where everybody is spending so much time just going everywhere and looking at everything brand new. We've never been able to do this before, that, you know, we could really see the effect of that. But that's kind of moderated as people spend all day at work on their computer now. They kind of don't want to be on it so much. But that's one of the big changes to it. But the things to do now with ebooks, for someone like us, Carlos and I were talking about this earlier, that people are not buying an object anymore. They're only buying the rights to use something that, in a certain sense, isn't an object anymore.
With e-books.
Right. So they don't have something that they have an equity in that they can then take and bring to us and get some value back on it, like you would a used car or something. They just get to use it themselves. Now, some people, and I think Barnes & Noble is one that's done this, they have modified it so you can at least lend your book to somebody else, your e-book, where you don't have it in your library anymore momentarily while they have it. But for us as a used bookstore trying to keep them recycling, going around, it's had a big effect. And right now the thing we need most is for everybody to really buy at least one new book a week or a month or something to be able to have them circulating and swapping around so that people who really can't afford even the e-book prices for things, that they can still be able to afford to read and to be able to come and do what we've been doing for years here. So,
does the Wild Detectives have a plan for dealing with the internet, for working with it, Carlos?
Well, like Donnie was saying earlier, the social media aspect of it has been the profound for us in terms of spreading the word letting people know about our business, particularly with Facebook and then Instagram and Twitter and all these things that weren't around when I was at Borders. And we've really used that to our advantage. And I think, having our goal being that our store be dynamic and be a part of the community and have people involved with that has really had the result of people wanting to share in that. We have one person that Jason Payas, that he's a photographer on the side, and he sort of loved our space so much that he wanted to take on the Instagram aspect of it, and has really done so much for us to just get share what we do on a regular basis and the products that we offer, the coffee and the beer and the books, and then we have so many other people that are just sort of wanting to participate and tag, quote unquote, our business through Twitter or Facebook and really share that what we would consider word of mouth in the past is now word by social media. And we've been open 3 months, and ironically we haven't spent a dime in traditional advertising. It's all been through this this new aspect of marketing through through our own consumers and people that are interested in that. Going toward to as far as what John was saying about the internet and Amazon, if there's one thing that Amazon has been good for is showing that people are willing to dive deep in the catalog. Once you have an infinite selection available, it's no longer about the best sellers, no longer about the top sellers. People are willing to take risks to go far, far into what's available out there. And I think that's sort of encouraged us to take risks with our inventory and not focus on the front list, but really curate a selection of things that we like that are underrepresented, not off the beaten path type of books, and to our delight, people are picking them up and buying them, and that's been really rewarding to see that.
This is a statistic I've heard for years, and it apparently hasn't changed, and that is that the top two things when asked, what people are asked, what would they like to see move into their area, in their neighborhood, the top two things are a bakery and a bookstore. And that, despite the internet, they didn't say an Apple store, they said a bookstore. So my question is, why do at least some people still want to go to a bookstore?
You want me to answer that one?
Sure.
I tell you, people have a lot going on in their mind. And some of the readers that have read just a lot of books, they want to come in and discuss those books. And you can't very well sit in your four walls and talk about your – we saw a lot of Louis Lamour, by the way. And so we had a lot of them come in. They had Louis Lamour when we first opened up because we didn't know really what we were at that time. They wanted to discuss it, Louis Lamour and the Wild Wild West and everything he did. And, it was a place to get stuff off your chest. And, today they call us the Cheers because everybody's coming in there. You had the same people over and over and over that continues to come in and find something new that they haven't seen before. But it's also that discussion that, hands-on, that if you're sitting at your desk all day, you don't get your work. Now I want to, talk about, what I read in the romance book. And I want to figure out what else is out there. What's good? What did this author say? What did that author say? Or I seen something in Facebook that, I'm going to go get that author. And we have that available. So, and we have the conversation there in every aspect.
I find, I'm not sure if my experience is reflective of others, but I find that in a way Amazon is kind of crushing because everything is available. It's kind of bewildering. I know that they go to a great deal of effort to recommend. They have various kinds of picks. They segment things by genre. But I also know that I have particular tastes, and it's not so easy to wander in Amazon to find these peculiar things, whereas it's sort of on your time and at your leisure, at your speed, that you can, you know, wander around a bookstore and find things. And with Amazon, if you're in biographies and you're not likely to stumble across a novel. But I find that the bookstore experience is very amenable to just that kind of free form looking.
Sure, and you can't have a conversation with your computer either, so being able to go somewhere where there are other people that share passions about books and are interested in reading and discovering, you engage and you have discussions and you find out what other people are reading, and if it's something that clicks with you, then you seek that out. But just being at home and perusing and Amazon, it's very cold. It's not really indicative of really getting you excited about making a book purchase. It's only you're just looking at algorithms and seeing what Amazon has paired based on what your searches were.
But based on my statistics, what has been the reception in your neighborhoods? I mean, immediately the other people in Bishop Arts or the people in your neighborhood on Meadowbrook in Fort Worth. What is, I mean, it's like, oh, great, we have a bookstore, or what are you? Who are you?
Both.
I say it's a recalibration at some time when you haven't had a bookstore and you don't know what it is, and it's, at some point it's intimidating. Some people are, it's various extremes. Some people are excited and other people are intimidated. And so you have to meet those needs. And a lot of times we're outside the bookstore, and we're standing out there, we're meeting people as they walk by and just kind of talking to them. And the bookstore experience with children and the family is also, you can't really teach your child or share with your child about reading by going to Amazon. That's a disservice to children. So you bring in families to say, hey, books are important. I hear that in school. And now my parents, they are doing it. So, I'm going to do what my parents do. So it's a family. It becomes a family thing. And that's what we try to promote. Why send your child in here and you not come? What are you teaching your child? So
we're talking today about independent local bookstores. You can join the conversation by calling 800-933-5372 or emailing think@ker.org. We'll be back in a moment.
Funding for Think comes from the SMU Master of Liberal Studies program, accepting applications for this fall to design your own Master of Liberal Studies degree with concentrations in human rights, creative writing, and organizational dynamics. More at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Jerome Weeks, and today for Chris Boyd. And our guests today are three representatives from local independent bookstores: Carlos Guajara from The Wild Detectives in Oak Cliff, John Tilton from Lucky Dog Books, and Donya Craddock from The Dock Bookshop in Fort Worth. And if you want to join the conversation, you can call 800-933-5372 or send us an email at think@kera.org. And during the break, we got an email from Chrissy from Plano. She asked a number of questions. I'm going to take one. What did you run into you weren't expecting when you started the bookstore and then you ran into something you weren't expecting? What was if you something that your business model didn't account for, something that you personally didn't think a bookstore running a bookstore would involve?
I think somebody mentioned it earlier, dealing with inventory and taking that jump on inventory. And one thing, I thought everybody loves fiction, you know, romance. Oh, it is the romance thing. Come to find out, we didn't have a lot of romance readers. I think a lot of those readers took flight and went to became e-readers. So, you know, I had a love affair with romance, but it wasn't there. And then I did not know how popular urban fiction was. And so urban fiction, like, you know, I'm a classic and, you know, a Toni Morrison type reader. And then I found urban lit was like the big name of the day. And so, you know, we had Wahida Clock with the Thug series. I'm like, what? Are you serious? What is that? You know? And so I had to really, and they tell some great stories and life lessons. So those are one of the challenges, just really shifting my inventory to what the community demanded.
John, Carlos, anything similar that this was not what you were expecting?
Well, for us, it was a little odd because as you grow up, and especially the time when I did, when it was nearly all new bookstores, you always kind of imagined that a new bookstore is what you would create, something like Donna has or Carlos. But when we looked at what it costs to do that in terms of initial inventory, there was a store up here on North Central at Walnut at the time called The Bookseller that was a great store. It wasn't overly large, but yet her inventory, even in that day of like the early 70s, was like $300,000, her cost in it, which we thought, oh, we'll never be able to do that. So we went to the used side of things because we could afford to get that started with $500 on a $500 on a credit card. You know, we could get going. And what I realized after being in it a while is that the things that were new and unexpected were the books coming in the front door. Had we done a new store, we would only have ever sort of known the books we knew and the books that maybe a sales rep or somebody would tout us on. But what we get to see is what everybody else knows. And so kind of like Donna was saying, that you see what your customers are really interested in and what they bring to you, and you realize that you really are sort of the essence of a community store because the things on your shelves are the things your community is interested in and they're bringing to you. And so for me, the unexpected thing is seeing that book I've never seen before that somebody brings in that they knew about. And so it's a great learning experience from that point of view.
We have to take a call from Cliff in Dallas. Cliff, are you there? Cliff?
Claire.
All right.
Claire in Dallas. Yes, I thank you very much to all of your guests for the work that they're doing. I love books, but I'm on a very tight budget, and most of the things I can get are used. But that said, I like to look at all of the things you'll have in stock. May I ask that at some point, could the guests have posted on your website the bus route or the train route that runs closest to their stores? Because I depend on public transportation. And secondly, if I want a book, new or used, that you do not currently have in stock, would you order it for me from the publisher? Because I'd rather support an independent store than go through Amazon myself.
Thank you very much, Claire.
And thank you. Thank you for having the show.
So do you take special orders?
We are very nuts and bolts about our system, and I have been on a sort of a case-by-case basis, but we don't have a fully developed infrastructure yet to do sort of a general online ordering. But we are working on a website. That's coming out soon, and going forward, we'll see how we'll handle, because we do want to be able to to provide that service and be able to, you know, have as you know, offer as many books as we can to our consumers, and that's one way to go about it. But she can Claire can feel free to contact us at info@thewilddetectives.com, and we can certainly see about about getting a book for her if she would like.
That was a very good suggestion. I thought about the map, the transit map, helping people get to find it. I hadn't thought of that actually myself. Mm-hmm. But considering Oak Cliff, that can be tricky finding it.
Certainly.
We'll have another caller, Rhonda. Rhonda, are you there? Yes, you had a comment?
Yes, I would just like to encourage the independent bookstores to just keep doing what they're doing. You were certainly correct, Jerome, I think it was, who said that when residents are asked what do they want in their neighborhood, the top two things are bakeries and bookstores, and I can certainly attest to that in Murphy, which is a very growing community. And when we've done market researches out here, bookstores are at the very top of the list usually, but we have not been successful in getting one because they look at the demographics, and because there's, let's say, there are 18,000 people, they don't really think it's worth, putting out a bookstore. So, that's a dilemma that we face. But I also would like to encourage parents to give books to their children. One of my fondest memories is to when I bought a book from Emma Rogers. When my first son was born, he was 8 months old, and I bought this book for him, and we loved it so much, I ended up buying the books in boxes, and I've given them out over the past 28 years to little kids, to their parents, and the latest being just a few weeks ago to my great-nephew. The children these days are so much into the technology with the iPads and the games that I think parents are missing a vital opportunity to pass on the love of reading to their children. Because you can't have that shared moment with a game on an iPod the way you can by sitting a child in your lap and reading a book to them. And I think that if we don't start to check that, because I saw it with my own kids who are now young adults, if we don't start to check that, it will really not bode well for neither the independent bookstores or the authors or even Amazon when you look at the book sales. And just lastly, I have been to the Dot Bookstore. My alumni group had one of our alumni members to come over and do a book signing, and it was a great family event. So I think that's one of the ways that independent bookstores can certainly be much, much different than any experience online or even the larger stores. So thank you so much. Independent business people, love you.
Thank you very much for your comments. I noticed that all of your stores have children's sections.
Well, there's a reason. I'm glad you mentioned that about kids and books and reading with them, because there's a reason that children's picture books are the size and shape that they are, that you can open them up and you have this wide spread that's visual and the words that are big enough for someone to read from a bit of a distance, because you've got the book out where you and your child can both see it. And so she's right on the money there, that if we get kids started with them young, it's another object for them to interact with that is in some ways more real than these others that they have. Yes, they'll do all those things, but they'll still like the books if they can just come to appreciate them young enough.
And now I'd like to hear from Christine in Denton. Christine?
Yes.
You have a comment for us?
Yes, I do. I'm 24 years old, and I see every day all my friends going out drinking and things along those lines, or buying books on Amazon and taking them, their Kindles or whatever, with them to the bars. However, when I see that, I see them they're in the book, however, they're not interacting with each other. And every time I've gone to a bookstore, I've always met new people and just connected so well with other people. They introduce me to new books. They introduce me to new concepts and new ideas from different things. And I would be much more willing to say yes to someone who asked me out if they bought me a book and not a drink.
How about both? Because we offer.
That's right. You can get both at the Wild Detectives. Well, thank you very much, but that's a very interesting suggestion. Have you thought of arranging date nights at your bookstores?
We actually have. We did speed dating, date nights, and Christine's correct. You need all those interactive events to entice that generation to come in. And we ask a lot of those groups, if she's a part of an organization, bring your group in, and we can show them people don't know what they don't know. And I think another guest, Rhonda, who came to the doc, bookshop she brought in her group. And so somebody in her group may not have been familiar with the bookstore, because you have those people in society that are so passionate about making the society a better place. And the best way to do that is creating a functionally literate society. And she does that by passing out books, but now get them into the bookstore. And that's the best way, Christine, one of your callers can do is, you know, bring your group into the bookstore and you show them what you know.
The technique in the book selling business is known as hand selling. That's the recommendation from a knowledgeable person, and not often a bookstore clerk or something. Basically, can take someone who's looking for something and really tell them this is what you need. I wanted to ask if there are particular favorites of yours in your inventories that you like to sell, that you like to push on people because you think it's worthwhile, but you also think that they will really enjoy it. I was wondering if anyone can think of personal favorites that you would hand sell someone. You'd say, this is for you. This is something that's in here that we think is really worthwhile.
I think for me, it's usually just a book that I myself have really read and that I enjoyed. There's a certain point which we try not to cross, which is where we're really just selling a book, as opposed, like I try and tell new people, if you're suggesting this book thinking of the customer, go right ahead and do it. If you're suggesting this book thinking of us, I don't want you to do it. So if it's something you personally are having experience with and that you feel this person would really like it, then go ahead. So, yeah, it's a mystery I've read that I really liked, or an action novel or something, you know. But or Joseph Conrad, I still remember being amazed by his use of the language for a man who wasn't raised in the language. You know, you couldn't be in the same room with me reading your book if I was reading Conrad. I'd have to tell you, oh, let's see how he did this. You know, so, yeah.
I'll refer back to some of your callers. You have some great callers. I think it was Claire that said, you know, how can I get a certain type of book? Books are so vast and so wide, and you have to really connect with that person. So if somebody's, you know, I want to make money, I want to do this, I say Dennis Kimbrough, Think and Grow Rich. Mm-hmm. And I just want a great, you know, and I love Dennis Kimbrough. I just love him. But, and then you have somebody else, you just have to really connect with those with your customers. And yeah, I love romance, you know. And I love history at the same time. Oh, Beverly Jenkins, she's the best. You can just read her series all day long. And so it just depends on where your customer is at, where they're at. And it's just a few words and tricky phrases to say, okay, I know what you want, you know. And you just kind of feel them, and you have to be a reader yourself to pull what you want to pull out of your customers.
Oh, I just prefer forcing things on people. So. Carlos, you have such a particular kind of audience, a particular kind of selections in your store.
Right. One of the books that we all are behind, and for obvious reasons, is Roberto Bolaño's The Savage Detectives, which is actually what the name of the store is derived from, a Chilean author who wrote many wonderful books. And this is just one that... that everyone sort of rallies around just because of, you know, it's our namesake, but it's also just a great read. And I personally have a couple of other authors that I like to push on people, one of them being Javier Marías, another Spanish author, and also Ian McEwan, Atonement. It's still one of those books that just, you know, blew my socks off when I read it 10 years ago. And even though there's a movie now, it's really it's just a book that you need to read.
Well, thank you very much. My guests today have been Carlos Guajardo from The Wild Detectives in Oak Cliff, which just opened 3 months ago. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And John Tilton of Lucky Dog Books, celebrating their 40th anniversary. Congratulations. And Donya Craddock of the Doc Bookshop in Fort Worth. Thanks again for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We enjoyed it.